you just want to own real estate, you should get into syndication deals where you're just no liability.
Hello, everybody. It's Sixth Sense, the host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six best-selling author, the G-Daddy. Gino Barbaro, Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano.
What you gonna say?
And Mr. Skittles over there, I like the shirt. Maybe we'll even sing a little opera at the end of this. I don't know where this is going today, but this is going to be a lot of fun today. How you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. Our guest today has built a thriving community around the concept of mailbox money. He began working in the roofing trade and now uses real estate syndication to help others passively invest and keep more of their hard-earned money. So without further ado, Dustin Henderson, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
It is our pleasure, as the folks at Chick-fil-A like to say. I would like to hear a little bit about this roofing. Talk a little bit about starting in the roofing trade. What exactly did you do? And did any of those skills transfer over into multifamily investing?
Yeah, a lot of the skills transferred because it's just business. It's, you know, money in, money
business.
Out.
He's into business. Yeah.
Business. So I realized when I was roofing, I joined a roofing company and then I slowly got moved up the ladder and then I bought into another roofing company and then I bought that guy out eventually. And I guess just scaling and learning how to deal with employees and emotions and all that stuff. I learned a lot in the, you know, having that business about income and how you need to make money and how you need money at certain times to pay bills and how you also need to just be constantly efficient all the time in order to always make money. And then it also allowed me to meet all the different subcontractors and trades. And then I could get advice from them when I started actually developing and building houses. I started in about 03, 04 is when I did my first little development. It was just a duplex.
Could you have picked a harder trade to go into than roofing? I mean, kitchen and roofing are probably the two of the suckiest jobs on the planet. And we're both here. And then we got Mr. Stenziano there being a mover. Those are probably three of the worst soul sucking jobs.
Good luck hiring roofers right now.
Yeah.
Employees, right? Like how is the hiring could have been easy, right?
Yeah, it was easier back then. I mean, I've never really had trouble hiring. I don't know if I just attract people to me, but I have trouble hiring if I'm not around. If I'm around, I can hire people. It's very easy for me to hire people. But roofing, I mean, everything's getting harder and harder. I can tell, you know, when I can talk to all the contractors, because I talk to contractors all the time being in development, and you can tell it's much, much harder to get employees now. But I noticed the signs, the now hiring signs just keep getting bigger. I don't think the problem's going away. The signs are just
so somebody's getting paid to make bigger signs, or at least they're able to hire right now.
And Dustin, when did you see the opportunity in real estate? And you said you've gotten into development. And, you know, it is another business. It's income over expenses. It's systems. It's people, systems, and cultures, we like to say. When did that light bulb go off for you and say, you know what, I'm just doing a roofing. It seems like I'm getting paid. I'm building a little business here. But I really want to scale into multifamily and development.
So I didn't really know about scaling back then. I just wanted to own my own house. And the way that I did that, I guess it's called house hacking now, but we developed a duplex. We rented out all the other side, and then we rented out even rooms in our own house, and it worked out extremely well. Mm-hmm. So then from then on, we just kept going. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the light bulb went off. I just wanted to own my own home, the American dream. And then it kind of just snowballed from there.
So define the word mailbox money. And when you say that to people, are there a lot of people out there with that limiting belief of that's not possible?
Yeah, they don't think they can get it in real estate because for the most part, it's hard to find a group, you know, that you can invest in. If you don't really know what you're looking for and you think I have to go buy a duplex and I got to deal with toilets, tenants, and termites, it's a lot of work to deal with that. And then everything's an emergency and then you're dealing with emotions. And if you're not really a business owner, you just get tied, you get pulled into that. And then you think, oh, this is terrible. I just want to go back to work because owning a duplex is more like a business, right? Or owning real estate is more like a business. So
it is a business. Yeah.
When did you come to that epiphany? Because at Jake and Gino, we love to say we create multifamily entrepreneurs. That's what we talk about because Jake and I, we had the I'm a mentality in the beginning. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to get burned out real quick. And that's why you get into multifamily. So you can start buying these little assets, putting them together and hiring. When was that epiphany for you?
Okay. So I got burned out when we got into EOS. We started implementing that system on a real estate company without having processes. The problem is EOS is not just a band-aid like they say it is, because if you're a starter and you're driven and you're going out and getting deals all the time, EOS is not what you need. You need EOS if you have all your systems and processes and you don't know how to scale. Mm-hmm. So we overscaled without any processes. And then I completely destroyed all my capacity, got totally burnt out and knew there was a better way. And then I also started to understand that the smaller projects weren't doing quite as well as the bigger projects. And then when I went to your conference, my partner was the one that went through it, that set it up. And he said, hey, you should check this out with me. So we flew down to Nashville and I just kind of thought a light bulb went off at your conference more than anything. So
walk us through that process. Cause that was Nashville, it was MM2 back in October of 2018. So that was 3 years ago. MM4, everybody, is going to be October 23rd and 24th this year at the Gaylord Palms. So back then you overscaled. How did you do? What did you do to fix everything? Cause Jake and I almost did that at 600 units. We didn't have even property management software. We were just buying deals and it's like, oh gosh, we have no core values. We have no mission statement. How are we going to hire our next employees? And we were just like completely overwhelmed. What did you do to actually, you know, pull the e-brake and start trying to put those systems and processes
I put numbers down on every single investment because I didn't even have numbers, right? We were just, let's get as many investments as we can. We know they're cash flowing. I know the gray area very well. I know when I'm making money and when I'm not. So I realized, hey, I'm not really making money right now and I'm doing a lot of work. It was like a flat line. So that kind of sparked me to sell everything that was low performing. So I had it on a spreadsheet, lowest performing thing, boom, sold it. Cause I fall in love with just having the doors, just having all this stuff. And then it really wasn't very productive. So I just started selling all of my stuff that was taking capacity and it wasn't producing any result.
Dustin, wow. Do you look at profit per unit?
No, not really. I'm very unsophisticated.
No, and this is not super sophisticated. It's just something that, so we do a monthly draw report, and on the draw report, all the different apartment communities that are on there, we actually list out, we call it PPU. It's just profit per unit. So we can identify exactly what you're saying every month, who's the top performer property, who's the lower performer and why. And the cool thing is the more data that you have, the bigger your portfolio is, you can start to see trends locally or even in the construction or vintage or area as to why this property may be outperforming this other property. So there's different trends that you can see, and it's a great way to, in a simple way, it's not like complex, it's a simple way to use the data. So basically it's, hey, this property threw off $25,000 this year. There's 120 units, you know, divide that. And then you get your PPU and you start to rank these things. And then you really start to see it, intuitively, you probably know it, right? This is your properties, you know, it's performing well, but it just gives you that little extra like a level of granularity and detail to have the data to back up what you probably already know. It's cool. It's worked really well for us. So yeah.
Yeah. One of my partners does do that on some of his stuff that he has personally. So maybe I'll look into that.
And once you started doing that, what other metrics were you looking at in your, you know, if you want to carry that over, what are the metrics you're looking for your business?
I was just looking at cash flows and percentages, like how much is this thing actually making? I just did P&L. So I did a big P&L and okay, here's how much we're making on this. And I spend about this many hours there.
Mm-hmm.
But it was directly correlated to the amount of units.
He said hours, Gino, return on effort.
Right. ROE, baby. Yes. Yeah. And I think the other quote that I always love to say is revenue is vanity, profit margin is sanity, and cash is king. And we learned that through our coaching. You can have all the units you want. You could be like Dustin and have thousands of units, but if 300 of them are making more than 3,000, then does it make sense to really scale up and just like to kill yourself? Because there is a return on effort component. If you can focus your time on what makes you more money, you're going to become even more profitable. I mean, I guess that's the epiphany you had as well, correct, Dustin?
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. Return on effort, I guess. Cause I mean, without actually knowing the profit per door, I could just like, okay, we made this much and I had this much time into it. Not worth it. Let's move on.
So let me ask you, on your first big multifamily deal, let's talk about that one maybe, and then say how you've, I guess, evolved recently into going through that. And I want also to talk about the different structures, whether it's syndication, JV, what you like about each one of them. So let's talk about that first deal. What was that first multifamily deal? What did that look like for you?
The first deal, I was a KP and an LP, and then I helped do some design exterior design and some sign design for Zach Happenstall in Phoenix. It was on an oak tree investment. That was 76 units. So the thing to me there was I had no control, right? So I gave up all control and said, here's my investment. What do you want me to do? Here's my skills. How can I help? And so they hired me on as the designer. And then also I was the KP. So I wasn't super involved, but that was like a foot into the door. And then I got to see all the, you know, all the materials. I could put my eyes on that.
And what was the learning lessons there? What did you learn in that first deal? Peering through, looking through.
Okay. Partners are everything. Basically, if you can get a really good partner, then you just have to keep track to make sure that partner is the same person that you know, right? So something can change in their life and they could change. So then you got to keep an eye on that. And then just location. So you have basically control over the location. And for the most part, location's probably the most important, because you can buy a good deal in a great location and you can run it crappy and still make money. So if you pick the best location, I found you can do very well that way. But yeah, great operator obviously is number one.
And then since then, you've scaled up. What really has changed since then as far as the way you structure deals, the way you look at deals? What has really changed since the first deal?
I probably realize I know more than a lot of the people that look like they know a lot because I've been doing it for so much longer than most people. And I've been involved in so many different structures but I've also learned to give up more and more and more control. And it's really, really easy for me to do that. And it's hard for me. I realize how much control I give up because when I talk to people about giving up control, I can see how hard it is for them.
So now you're looking more at other deals. How are you underwriting deals right now? What are you looking at right now in this type of the market cycle?
Well, see, I'm not really an underwriter. So people always ask about how I underwrite this and that. I don't really underwrite. I actually have a bunch of people that underwrite, and then I just look at their stuff and see what they think. But I just look at their underwriting and make sure it's wildly conservative, like everything else. I look for the story. Why did you buy this thing? Because everyone has underwriting. Everyone can manipulate their underwriting however they want. They can make the deal look like whatever they want to. I want to know why you bought this
thing. But Dustin, price per unit doesn't matter either. All right. I get a lot of this.
So. No, I'm actually starting. That's my biggest worry, because I think price per unit is very important, and you can only push the rents so far according to the income. So the price per unit's rising faster than people's income. So that doesn't really make sense. But I love the 1% rule, honestly. Like, how close are you to the 1% rule? And then I like newer assets too, obviously.
And just for the folks out there, what's the 1% rule?
Just if your income should be 1% of the purchase price per month, right?
Yeah. And so what markets are you looking at that you can achieve that? Because our market...
None. I just try to get that. So we can still get that on development. Yes. When we develop, we can get that. But right now you can't get that on any market. I mean, we're even looking 3 caps in South Dakota. So it's pretty nuts.
3 caps. When you're underwriting though, like you said, you can manipulate the numbers. And we call that at Jake and Gino, Dustin is pencil whipping a deal, just making those numbers up. And, you know, I'm selling it 5 years from now at 2X of what I bought it for. And I'm doing this,
pencil,
you know,
going up $300 a year, year over year.
Yeah. So South Dakota, the 3 cap. I mean, if you're buying it at a 3 cap, what do you want to push it to? I mean, how do you think these people are making these numbers work? Because Jake and I are looking at a lot of deals every week.
It's a 1.5 exit cap. It's going to start falling to 10 year. All right.
Well, I think that real estate is overperforms at 20%, right? To me, 20% should be your benchmark for what you make on real estate long term. That's kind of what I look at. I think it's going to get compressed closer to 10 to 15, especially in the better markets. And maybe it's even less than that already in the really good markets or the popular markets.
So do you want to invest your money at that with all the risk involved and all the work involved? Is it worth it for someone like Dustin to go in there and do that? Or is it better worth it just to develop your own deals?
It's better worth it to develop my own deals. Yes. So as the cap rates get compressed, I just do whatever's best at the time. I'm not stuck to one certain thing. I feel like syndication was a better model 2 years ago than it is now, for sure, as far as acquisitions go. And that's why we're pivoting way more into development.
say, Gino, tell us about your typical development deal. Like, what does that look like?
Typical development deal looks like the best piece of land I can get my hands on. Like, it catches my eye somehow, or somebody sends it to me, and it really grabs my attention. And I look at a lot of things, school district, but it's all like just in my head, right? I don't know how to write it down and say, hey, you need to look at all these things. It's just a lot of factors that I just do in my head. And I figure out why it's the best. Then I can go down and write them down, all the reasons why it's the best. Let my underwriting team know why. But I like
are you
this.
Doing, yeah. Are you doing like garden style? Are you doing
everything? Yeah. I like, it should be infill though. I never want to develop in a cornfield, although most people do, or in a field somewhere. Mm-hmm. I prefer infill and pay more money per square foot for the land, because it's such a small amount of the overall deal. And you have instant customer base when you do infill. Mm-hmm. So I prefer infill, but it all starts with the piece of land. And my biggest skill is the design vision. That's my biggest skill. So I take that skill and I can take a piece of land and say, hey, real quick on a napkin, we can fit this much in here, this much parking, this many units above, and it all works on zoning. So we should pursue this deal, or this zoning, you know, and only allow you to do one story commercial. The leases aren't good. Can't get enough square foot. Boom, move on. A lot of stuff like super quick, just in my head. I everything's gray for me. And that's why I bring in an underwriter, because then they put it on paper to show everyone else what the deal looks like.
Do you also look, let's say, median income? Do you look at population growth? Do you look at rent growth in the area? All these things. Yeah. It's almost like you're underwriting a multifamily deal, but you're just looking at it. It may be a little more risk because it's not an asset that's there and there's a time horizon involved. But what benefits do you have of I want everyone to hear this, because it's important. The benefits are really tremendous when you're building your own asset, newer asset you can control. Can you give me some of the benefits in development?
Okay, so the development we're doing in Sioux Falls, the Blue on Lorraine, it's 125 units. It's on a lake. It's a natural spring-fed lake, but it was man-made. It's like a quarry or something. Mm-hmm. It's like the only body of water in Sioux Falls for the most part. And it's gorgeous, south-facing. We can build that for like a 6.5 cap roughly. We could buy that for maybe a 3, but it's never for sale. So really, I don't know if you can buy it for a 3 because it's not for sale. Uh-huh. So we can pick the absolute best location, build exactly what we want. We can get a wellness tech apartment, smart apartment, all community-based. You do that, all that stuff, and it's cheaper than buying. You get 100-year asset versus a 50-year asset. Mm-hmm. So I think designing for the times now, which there's been so much change over the last 20 years, the apartments are much, much nicer now than they are the old stuff that we're buying.
And how much does it cost typically per unit? That's how my brain works. If you have 100 units, how much does it cost per door once you break it down?
It's about 150 to 200 per door to build brand new A-class. So dude, depends on where you're at, right? So you can go to Texas and still build for 200 a unit.
And you're paying 200 for a C 1960s with cast iron crap that you have to get up to fix, and you have leaks every freaking year. So you're basically building a new asset. I mean, there's very little repairs and maintenance. Your expenses are a lot lower. I mean, that is amazing. That's awesome. Well,
acquisition costs are pretty much, our prices are more than replacement costs almost everywhere now. So
Wow. So you've gotten to this point of development. Can we just pull back a little bit and let's talk about, you know, someone wanted to get into multifamily. Don't you think that that person should learn all of the different ways, whether it's syndication, whether it's creative financing, whether it's JVing? I mean, where should somebody start if they want to get into multifamily?
Well, it depends on what you want to do. Do you want to just own real estate? Because if you just want to own real estate, you should get into syndication deals where you're just no liability. And very, you know, you don't have to put more money in if you don't want to.
Right? But that's hard because, right, you're giving up control. So you have to have that mindset to say, hey, I'm not going to own it. I'm not going to touch it. It's not mine. I may not be able to run day-to-day operations, but I can own it and still make money on real estate, correct?
Yes, but the thing is different. Do you want to switch careers or do you want to stay in your career and just invest? If you're just an investor, you should not buy active real estate, I don't think, because it's going to takes more of your capacity away. Plus, how can you focus on that asset when you're spending 40, 50 hours a week focusing on work? Plus, are you still focusing on work when you come home? And then your asset, your best asset, gets the least amount of your time. So if you're pivoting, you know, you should look into all kinds of structures. I say everyone should start with a fourplex, though, when they're young. Buy a fourplex, live in one side. That way you can figure out what property management is about, asset management, maintenance, all that kind of stuff. That way, when you're doing bigger deals, you know what the contractors are talking about. You know how to deal with all these people.
That should be everyone's starting point. That's college right there, everybody. Yeah. Go buy yourself a fourplex. Don't worry about school. All right.
Yeah. Wow. You'd be way better off if you bought a fourplex instead of a college tuition. I guarantee it.
That's a true investment. Yeah.
We're not going to go down that rabbit hole.
We just went there. All right.
I love college. The best experience that you'll ever get. So you should pay for it because experiences are worth it. But
yes. Okay. But if you're going to have $300,000 in student debt, when Bernie comes around, he may whack that out. So you'd be okay. So you got on the books, they'll take it out, they'll pay it for you. But if they don't, I'd rather have that $300,000 and maybe have two fourplexes around the neighborhood. Dude, just saying. And then
go on spring break with your friends every year. Okay. Until you're 25, or buy yourself a fourplex and figure some shit out. All right.
Buy a fourplex close to campus. Act like you're going to school.
There you go.
Wait, let's keep going, guys. Let's keep brainstorming. This is a good brainstorming session here. We're going to talk about how to go to college without going to college.
And maybe you buy the frat house. You know, you learned what really C-class properties are like, and you work on some party fees, right? Okay.
Yeah, learn how to do maintenance. Yeah.
I love that. Let me just go back 1 second. What Dustin said, it's really important. Know yourself. Know what your big why is. Know your goals. Read Napoleon Hill. Figure out what that why is. It's important because if you want to go into a full time, maybe you start as an LP, possibly a GP. And then when you're able to leave the job, all of a sudden you pivot. Or if you've got this great career you love, you're a doctor, you're a lawyer, you're killing it there. You just need to have some disposable income. Well, go find a Dustin who's an operator and possibly partner with that person and let them, you know, I guess.
And have your spouse become a property manager, right?
Yes. Check that real estate professional box. that's awesome. So as far as the syndication realm, how have you been able to use social media? Because I've seen you on social media a lot, LinkedIn. How has that helped your business?
It just builds a lot of credibility. Mm. And I just talk about what I know and why I think this is going to happen or that's going to happen. And I provide a lot of advice to people. And that if it helps them, great. If it doesn't help them, it just shows that I know what I'm talking about.
Wow. Love that.
So is the dollar getting stronger or is the dollar getting weaker?
I don't know, because now what I'm hearing is that everyone else's currency is so crappy, it doesn't matter. So I have no idea what's going on as far as that goes. All I know is that real estate's a good thing to buy all the time. And I was paying all my dollars for real estate.
I was just about to say that. You hear all these experts come on, and I'm not going to name names, and they keep saying the same crap all over again. We're going to have a crash. We've been having a crash for the last 5 years. Brian Burke was on the show a couple weeks ago, and I said the same thing. He said, just rewind what happened 3 years ago. We were buying at 4 caps, and now they're 3 caps. So it's just, you have to follow the market and follow where you think it's going to go, and I guess limit your downside
is it,
risk.
Is it follow the market or follow the confidence?
Mm. Which one is it?
I think it's follow the confidence, because I think shit's really more. But
yeah, I don't. Me. I think that it's better to go outside and see what's going on. I think that the news doesn't really tell you what's going on. They'll tell you one little part of the news and they'll spin that to get as much reaction as they can. We can do the same thing on social media, so you can see it. You can put a certain post out there a certain way and you'll get tons of reaction. And then you can put something out there that's maybe even more truthful and it'll get crickets.
The clickbait culture, right? That's what we're living in.
Guys, I'm going to share a story with the both of you. And I don't know if I've shared it a lot of times, but it's 1989. I'm in college, sophomore year. I'm sitting in my finance class and they're talking about the deficit, how it's going to destroy the country. And if we don't take control of our spending, we're just going to go into a depression like mode. This is like 30 years ago. And that's why people don't believe it, because they keep repeating the same stuff and it doesn't happen. And you keep repeating and it doesn't happen. And I'm sitting there 30 years ago and being afraid of it. So who's right and who's wrong here? That's part of the problem. I think we have to distill what works best for us and try to really educate ourselves on whatever niche or wherever we're going into, and then try to figure it out. And like you said, it is a hard asset. It's a basic human need. It's food, clothing, and apartments. And I think that's what it comes down to. Dustin, before we get to the short answers, what is your, you know, vision for the next 5 years for you, yourself, your company? What are you looking to do in the next 5 years?
I'm looking to, well, I like to develop nature, more natural land, and try to not disturb it very much, just enough to pump houses in. So I really like that lake development, because I feel like it increases people's wellness, well-being. Mm-hmm. I do love doing that, and I like creating some of that. But then also I want to develop just a few assets and position myself more as JV, I guess. I guess go backwards instead of constantly. It feels like syndication is a little bit of the rat race, I guess. And I almost would rather go backwards and only have 5 deals. But I've got
go back to that though. Why is syndication the rat race? Because I think I have my own thoughts on that, but I want to hear where you're coming from here.
Because there's a deal, right? And you get your investors in that deal, and then bang, there's another deal. Now you got to go and get your investors in that deal. Then there's another deal. Now, while you're getting investors in that deal, now you got to go back because they're 4 months ago, that deal closed, and now all the whatever's happening. So you're doing all your work on it. And then, you know, and then it's a cycle, and then you got another deal, and you got more work from these back deals. And then you have an issue with the deal 2 years ago, and now you're dealing with that. And then pretty soon it's just so much stuff. There's so much work. And it's like, man, I'm only getting 10% of each one of these. It's kind of the same thing. Then you start. And it's probably, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's just mindset. Maybe I'll get into the 5 deals and it'll be the same exact thing. Maybe it's just all work, but it feels like it's just too much. Like
transactional based.
Yeah, it's too transactional, because then 3 years from that first deal, or 2 years right now, the cycle, I don't know, 1 year now with the cycle, it's so bonkers. Selling. Now it's like, crap, now I got to take all that money. We got to find a 1031 for these people because they didn't want to sell after 2 years. You know, so then, yeah, I don't know. It seems you're beholden to your investors now.
You're so fixing and flipping 150 units at a time instead of one. And you may not even be fixing it at this point. You may just be flipping it and letting the market ride right now. So
yeah, there's a lot of that.
It's very transactional based. And I don't think it doesn't, for Gino and myself, I don't think it serves us as well. And that's why we've done a couple, and you know, it's just another tool in the toolbox, but it just depends on really the size of the asset and the ultimate long-term goals.
Jake, I want to play devil's advocate for a second, because I think it could be a great strategy for someone who has a little bit of capital to get into deals, to create some acquisition fees, to create an asset management company where you're getting asset management fees. And if you have the vision, and maybe you may be an investor like Jake and Gina that says, I'm going to charge maybe a higher acquisition fee, but I'm not going to sell this. I want my investors to be in this deal 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years.
Real partners, right?
I'll push you back.
Yeah, it's not a transaction. Right.
I'll push you back to the Sam Freshman podcast we did. Sam Freshman says he has investors who are with him the long term. They're basically generational wealth. If you can convince investors to do that, leave your money with them for the long term, hopefully maybe do a liquidity event where you refinance them and give them some of their capital back. But I think if you can find that niche of investors who wants that mailbox money, and they're out there right now, if you can find that, maybe that syndication works
for
them.
His two biggest mistakes were what, Gino? Sam Freshman.
His two biggest mistakes were selling too soon and not buying enough. And he was in California
selling
30 years
period.
Ago. Yeah.
Selling period, he said.
Yeah. Selling period. And, you know, his model is great because he's got, you know, investors, grandkids that he still owns deals from. So they're still cash flowing on these deals and there's no debt on them. So it's just continuing.
That was the sort of advice 2.1 was don't die. Just stay alive.
Build that equity up.
Because he's what? He's got to be in his 80s, right?
Late '80s. Late '80s. Yeah. Great podcast. Great show.
Cool. So I do agree with that. I do feel like syndication is so transactional based because there's always new players in the game and they have to go full cycle. Like, I don't know why you have to go full cycle to prove that you're doing a good job on a deal. Like, why do you have to sell it? And then also, if you're an investor, why do you want to sell at 5 years and then you have to go find another deal?
Because you're conditioned. Wall Street conditions you to do that. That's the problem. We're conditioned by financial advisors that this way is good and that way isn't good. 100-year in real estate investor, long term. You buy stuff for the long term. You hold it for the tax advantages. You hold it for the yield. And then obviously there's going to become a time where your return on equity is ridiculous. Then you actually sell out. But then I would sell out and maybe roll into a better class asset like what Dustin's building. So if you have a 1970s and you've made 300% on it, it may make sense to shift that money into something new. There's always
that's the cycle, right? You refresh, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get out. You maybe take something that's a little bit older and you refresh into something, you know.
Yes.
But I think this market right now is actually exposing syndication as a transactional based, because people are selling their assets. It's like, wait, why are you selling that asset? Oh, well, we hit our numbers early. What do you mean you hit your numbers early? Like, isn't there a lot more growth here left? And we're only 2 years into the plan.
It's because there's not a lot of skin in the game from the sponsor, and the way they get paid is through the waterfall. And then they're chasing waterfalls. What was it TLC like to say, right?
Don't go chasing waterfalls. Is that like your slogan?
That's all I'm saying, man. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high-pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we're back. All right, Dustin, I want to unpack this development stuff a little bit more. Someone getting in and they're saying, all right, hey, I want to do some development. What's a big mistake for, you know, folks that doing the first development, something that can benefit the listeners here? What do they got to watch out for?
Don't focus on the land price so much, because it's such a small portion of the deal. And I believe overpaying for the land is always a smart move, because it puts you in the center of the population normally, and you have a built-in customer base that wants to be there. When you build at the outskirts of town, you're always trying to sell them to come in here. Hey, come on down. You know, we got this, that, and the other. When you're right in the middle, the best location, it's so much easier.
Roll with the demand and the upside in the rental. Got it.
Yeah. And then that location extrapolates into your price later on. So it increases your price through everything you've done versus just the land. Like it just, the building's worth so much more in that location.
Mm-hmm. What do you like from a construction perspective? Are you into like just the gardens? You like the townhomes? What does perform well for you?
I like garden style is easiest to build, but I like the mixed use, higher density stuff, because I like the look of it.
Like a Starbucks downstairs or something like that, you're saying?
Yeah, 100%. And then you also have like this, like the commercial tenants like having residential tenants above, and vice versa.
It's a sexy, and it's also where the demographics are going right now. That's where a lot of people want to live. They want to have that convenience. If they're not going to own a house, let me at least be convenient and have a cool place to live.
Yeah.
What's the term, Gino?
I'm sorry?
What's the term? It's like the city moving to the suburbs. What the hell they call
it? Oh, the suburban. Chris Porter, we had him on the podcast from Big Shifts Ahead. He calls it the suburban environment, where you have the suburbanites want to be in the urban area within 15 minutes, but they want to have all those amenities. So you build a Whole Foods.
It's like a little bit like safer city with all the access, but yes.
So I call it an uptown, right? Because it's not your downtown business center. It's where all the culture happens, and it's a medium density mid-rise stuff.
Love that.
You were talking about issues scaling early on. Unpack the mistakes a little bit more and what people should watch out for. They're starting to scale their multifamily business.
You have to pick a partner that covers your weaknesses. And almost every time when we first pick someone, we want someone just like us so we can hang out with them and they're cool. You got to pick someone that's cool and nice, but is completely opposite from you, so that they can do everything you can't do. And then you kind of create a super team, and then you just fill weaknesses, I guess. Look for someone that is going to cover up all your weaknesses. Like I have an assistant. She's the exact opposite of me. She's highly organized and all this other stuff. And she can handle customers. I can't handle customers that are mad very well, because then I get mad. And I don't know, she covers all my weaknesses. Then I partner with someone like Omar, and he's straight financials, straight numbers, black and white, everything, super numbers. And he can instantly tell me right away, hey, can you just get this many more units in this development? And then I can say, sure, and I can go and make it work somehow.
Mm-hmm. Gino, he's over here pulling the strings. He's got a quant on one hand. He's got a customer service rep over here, you know.
Yeah, give up control. Let those people do their thing.
Hear you, because here's the thing. Like, I can come up with ideas like don't go chasing waterfalls, sing a little TLC, but Gino's the one over there who can actually sing. Okay, yeah. So this is where we're balancing each other out. So, dude, I feel you. I feel you, man. All right. Any book recommendations? Anything you've read recently in the last few years that will benefit someone's life?
A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle I just read, and that basically explains ego in very, very simple terms. And it doesn't explain it as a, you know, you want to look good and you want to win everything. It's more of a, I don't know, it's more of a spiritual way of looking at ego and how ego can just instantly take over. And he calls it a pain body, or it's like when this thing takes over, this emotion takes over, and you do all these things that you wouldn't necessarily do. And then it goes away. And then you look at yourself and you're like, why would I do and say all that stuff I just did? Now I have a mess and I got to go deal with it. It basically talks about that.
Is it like Freud or Jung? Like, what are we talking? We got the self, we got the ego. How's he breaking it down for us here?
I don't know, man. Eckhart Tolle writes in a different way than those guys. He's less, because it's more spirituality. It's not, it's not like Marcus Aurelius or anything.
It's like keep this thing in check and watch out for it because it's real.
Vastly intelligent, very intelligent dude. Yeah. When he writes, and that's the problem with people when they have an ego. They're not.
We all have egos, though. That's the thing. We all have egos. It's just how do we deal with it, right?
Well,
it's
you deal with it by the way he talks about spirituality. There's a higher being, right? There's a God up there. And you look at yourself, and you're not doing it for yourself. I look at it as trying to be humble, have the humility. You're not just doing it for your ego. You check yourself and say, should I really be doing that? Should I be really ripping these people off? And if you don't have that, higher being, that higher authority, which is going on right now, people do stupid things. But if you're beholden to something else and it's just not about you and it's about others, then that's what normally checks mankind as far as I'm looking at it. You don't have the psychopaths. The psychopaths just are beholden to themselves and they have the ego, and that's basically
my thing.
What
is
I
this? You got to be able to look internally at yourself and say, look here, MFR, and you're talking directly to your ego. We're going to be adaptable. We're going to be open to something that's different, and you're going to take it. All right. So I'm going to smack you around, because that ego's like process terminator robot, right? It's like, I'm going to do this. This is the way it's done. You know, systems, blah, 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 blah.
Hey, dude, don't your boy Dalio talk about it all the time? Ego and blind spots. I mean, you could probably give us a little summary on what
Dalio
says.
Dissertation on that, man. I just learned that word. So no, but look, guys, it's just, I, from my personal perspective, reading this stuff, it's real. We all have it. And we say things, and that's why I was just like, I was being a smart ass with Gina, but like, you know, we say we don't have an ego, or I put my ego in check. It's your ego's there. How well is the self able to deal with the ego and put it in check and say, chill the F out. We're going to do this. This is okay. And it's, if something is actually better for me, but it makes me look like a dumbass, that's when you're getting up there and you're actually getting smart, because you're able to put that SOB in check, because you know it's better for yourself or better for, you know, your community or your team or whatever. That's where I think people are getting to a slightly higher level of intelligence. And it's hard.
Jake and Dustin, it is hard in this kind of economy. Like Dustin said, you're seeing people do thousands and thousands of units. Maybe better for you to buy a 30-unit deal and a 50-unit deal. You only have 100 units. Your ego, if you really check it out and say, don't worry what everyone else is doing. What do I need to do? What is the best for my family or for my situation, because I'm working or whatever? I think that's what we just want you to do. Have a conscious awareness of how your ego is pulling your strings.
Dude, here's the thing. And we're in a time more than ever where ego is so hard to keep in check, because all of this stupid shit, I'm holding up my cell phone for the folks not on YouTube right now. All this Facebook, this Instagram, it's all, what's it doing? It's like a fucking feeding frenzy for the ego. And it's just growing and growing and growing. And then people want to get out there and posture and puff their chest. And I'm the smartest, and I'm the most woke, you know, and that's all that is posture and status stuff. So the ego, I think, has ballooned more than ever in history, because the people that were able to get on a mic like we're doing right now, were the newscasters, were the Michael Jacksons, and everything went through certain channels, whether it was, you know, CBS, NBC, or it went through, you know, the radio hits 101, you know, kind of thing. That was it. If you didn't hit those channels, you didn't have a medium to get out there. So now everybody in their mind is this superhero.
Yeah.
And so we're dealing with more ego and emotion. I don't know where the hell we're going with this, but man.
Yeah. We all think we're more important. That's totally a thing.
Oh, shit.
But that book is about awareness. So it's about awareness of the ego. So like you're saying is,
yeah.
Can you become aware of your ego? And then can you also stay aware and be aware that that person is probably acting like that because of their ego too. And after a few, they're probably not even thinking the same way anyways, once they calm down. So if you're the one that can actually stay cool, and like you say, you might look like a dumbass in the short term, but you never will look like a dumbass in the long term.
What project are you excited about right now?
Me?
You, Dustin.
The Blue on Lorraine. That's the one we're doing. That's the 120.
So you were talking about, like, you said something about, like, I like it because it's got water. I didn't really know what the hell you're talking about. Is this like, you're going, like, all natural, you got like water towers and you're producing electricity, or is this more of like you just love the architecture? Like, yes. Tell me what you really mean.
So wellness design is basically all about the flow of the units and the building and
feng shui.
Feng shui, let's say. I'm not necessarily into feng shui, but feng shui is a
dude, I hold it against you, it's cool.
Yeah. So feng shui is like the height of wellness design then. But if people don't know what feng shui is, it doesn't have as much of an impact on them. Mm-hmm.
Have like a fitness thing outdoors with like oak trees that people are doing pull-ups on and like, you know,
There's yoga, there's paddle board yoga that they do on the lake. And we have like an observation deck. It's basically just, I mean, if you went to some cities, they'd have stuff just like this, but in our city, it's smaller. We don't have anything like this. It's only 250,000. And they're short on A class. The demographics are high. But everything has just been developed by the old developer that just builds the, you know, the white walls, oak trim, oak cabinets, carpet, you know, done. It's the same thing that's been built forever. And that's kind of what gets built there. So there's not a lot of competition. And that's why I'm excited about it, because it's going to bring something so fresh and so new to the city. Plus, you'll be able to see it from the interstate. It pops up over the commercial stuff and it'll have a little sign
on. So when I show up, I get like a brown Jedi robe and they give me like a little glass of green tea. Right. And then we sit down into a yoga pose and then we hit the lake. And that's that's just the property tour. Right.
Right. So what we want to do is we want to bring in a juice bar, whatever, but then we want to have it like, hey, here's our book recommendations or here's what we're doing, and make it more of a community thing. Try to increase people's awareness, try to increase their spirituality, their philosophy, all that kind of stuff. Just get them thinking more.
Dude, man. All right, Gino, take us home here.
This has been a great show. I don't know where we went from roofing to ego. I don't know how the heck that happened, right? So Dustin starts off in college. He goes out, he says, I'm going to become a roofer. I don't like this college thing. He gets on, jumps on top of a roof, buys one company, buys another company, starts getting into multifamily and he starts scaling up. And the great thing about it is he goes to a Jake and Gino event, MM2, and the light bulb goes off there. And he says, wow.
Over after that, man.
That's it.
I just did a post about it. So I think so people were like, let's go to the next Jake and Gino. So I think we got about 5 people on that post.
I saw that, dude. Closing the gap. And that's what it's all about. It's all about evolving, right? If he could have stayed as a roofer, he could have been doing that. That's a great job. But he saw that there was greatness. He saw that there was more. And now all of a sudden, his plans of building an amazing A-class community in an MSA of 250,000 where there is demand there. Obviously, he's done his homework and he's evolved from syndication, from JV to being able to do development. That's what life is all about. It's all about constant growth and constant evolution and not being stuck and saying, hey, I need to know where I am in the market cycle. And, you know, Dustin really hasn't hammered it, but I'm sure the education is always there. It's constantly being educated and constantly learning. And the other thing that I took away from it is partnerships. Don't be afraid to give up a little bit of control. Don't be afraid to look within to see what you want and just go out there and make it happen, my friend.
Ooh, we said a little MIH. All right, before we sign off, Dustin, if folks want to get involved in one of your projects, get a hold of you, learn more, where do they go to get that info?
MailboxMoneyRE.com is our website. Otherwise, hit me up. LinkedIn's really easy. My phone number is 605-691-1933 if they want to text or call. I'm more available that way. My email is dustin@mailboxmoneyparty.com. We just got a new one, so I'm more professional.
Or fengshuiwellnessrealestate.com mailbox/Dustin. We'll see you there. Awesome, man. Great time having you here. We really appreciate you, and best of luck with your new project.
Thanks, Dustin.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.